Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everyone.
It's that time of the week.
It is that time. We hope you're having a wonderful week.
It may not be your week, your month, or even your year, but I'll be there for you.
Aww.
That was a monologue from Friends.
That was really, really nice,
thank
Rob.
Thank you so much.
Still connected to musical theater.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because
yes.
They wrote which big musical?
Personals.
And what other musical did they write?
Marta Kaufman and David Crane.
Yep. We're going to go to Goodspeed. It's going to be Greg Edelman and Carolee Carmello.
It's where they met.
It's based on the Dudley Moore movie from 1981.
And I sang a song from it. Rob, help me.
It's called Arthur.
Arthur, that's right, of course. I forgot that they wrote that
as
well.
I love that score.
Marta, David, you guys clearly don't have to worry about paying the bills. Write us another musical.
You know their expenses.
It's been 3 decades. Write another show. Come on.
We're waiting.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a Friends parody. It doesn't have to be an extension of Friends.
Just write a show.
Come on.
And they, what are you doing?
Wait, come on. Guys, what are you
I'm
doing?
I'm sure they're producing television still.
No. Isn't she doing Grace and Frankie?
Oh, that's right. Of course she is.
She's doing Grace and Frankie. I don't know what he's doing. I'm so bad.
That's okay.
I'm sure they're doing something incredible.
I know. And I'm sure spending a year or two writing a musical isn't exactly the top of things to do once you've been in the television world, but still.
But you know, guys, if you want a nice
come back home.
Come to us.
Come back home.
Come back home. You'll always find a home. When I think of home, I think of a place
speaking
with
of
love overflowing. That's the only song lyric I know from home.
That's wonderful.
So I have a Tony Awards playlist that it's a song from every show that has won Best Musical since 1947.
Yep, 47.
Till now.
Okay.
And all of them, I'm very strict that it has to be the original cast recording.
Oh, obviously. So except,
it's not like a revival of Guys
and
Dolls.
Exactly. Or the London. Yes.
But the one thing that's killing me, folks, is Apple Music does not have for purchase the Wiz original cast recording. And I don't want... Oh. I love.
And you can't listen to Where's Charlie because there is no original cast recording.
No.
So there's that.
Wiz. And I love Diana Ross. But
we don't need the soundtrack, you know.
So I was able to find Stephanie Mills singing Home from an album she did in the mid-80s. It is
that doesn't count, Rob. That doesn't count.
It's on there, but it's so synthesized.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And she starts off with a monologue.
80s.
It's and she goes, when I think of home.
No.
And I'm like, it's a monologue. She's monologuing it. Yes, monologue.
One of my favorite Stephanie Mills-isms is, if you know the cast album to Children of Eden, and she's like, the spark of creation. Big old breath in
that
one.
Breath.
Whenever I coach that song, I'm always like, nope, you cannot take a breath in there. I don't care what she did. But man, I love that she did take that breath confidently.
She is strong. She's making bold choices.
Amen to that.
I love that.
Exactly.
I love that. What's going on?
How you doing?
Good. I feel like I just bumped into you. Hey. What's going on?
Fancy being you in this podcast once a week.
Hey, fancy meeting you here. Name the show.
Hey.
Or, sorry. Hi. Fancy meeting you here.
Oh, it's just Angelaide Weber.
No. Aaron's in Flaherty. Tony.
The Lucky Stiff.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you. I could have given you an easy one from Lucky's.
I was hearing some other 1980s Aspects of Love thing.
Oh.
I don't know.
Let's do that again.
Da, Oh, no, the kid. No, it's Miss Saigon. You know, my favorite thing on Twitter is when people, there's a couple like John Miscavige and a couple other people, they do that thing where they'll quote a tweet and then they'll do a very specific musical theater reference. But it'll be like what Chris said right before Ellen left the room, you know, and it'll be some really funny video, a GIF or something. I love people that make those jokes on Twitter. I know this was a very generic thing with no context right now, but it really makes me happy. Specific theater jokes for specific people. It's like that title of show. I'd rather be 9 people's most favorite thing than 90, whatever the rest of it is, than 10 people's least favorite.
I love when
thing.
A quote can stay with you like
Don't
that.
Don't you like when I just said 3 different things and did not say any of them correctly.
I screw up on all the time too. I would rather be 9 people's favorite thing than 100 people's ninth favorite thing.
I felt like you were doing an improv exercise now.
That's a yes end. It's a yes end for the folks. But I learned an improv.
Oh, thank you, Rob.
By Mike Nichols.
Oh, man. I would take a Mike Nichols
improv class.
Oh my goodness, can you imagine? Peter
Gallagher.
Yeah.
Peter Gallagher was talking about Mike Nichols.
Talking about how special he was and that what his advice was, take an improv class because it'll help you in life.
Yeah.
When he was younger and he was directing something and he was doing Virginia Woolf.
Yeah.
And he was this young movie. Kid and then his yes ending was the best way to get through it.
I can't imagine being a first-time director and you're directing a movie of the biggest play to come off of Broadway with Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton. I would be like, what? How the hell does this work?
And how'd you get that job? Amazing.
Good for him.
I know.
Good for him.
Worked out pretty well for him.
I love that movie. Anyone who says Elizabeth Taylor was not an actor, get the fuck out. Don't sit next to me.
People that we've interviewed that worked with her, I believe,
she was an actress.
Espoused that as well. That said, yeah, no, she was. She say what you will, but she really took it seriously.
She was one of those actresses. I think that people were so obsessed with her beauty. That unfortunately took priority over her abilities, but she was a very able actress, and I thought she was brilliant in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Yes.
Her best performance, though, is as Wilma Flintstone's mother in the Flintstones movie.
Did she really play
that? Oh, yeah. She's Mrs. Flintstone.
Wilma's mom. Rosie O'Donnell was in?
Yeah, with John Goodman.
Oh, my goodness.
She showed up as Fred Flintstone's mom.
Boy, good job.
I'm like, good for you.
Wow.
She also showed up on The Nanny. My friend was on The Nanny and said like that she was the nicest human being on the face of the earth. And like the day before she got to set, they sat the entire cast down and said, Elizabeth Taylor, you cannot talk to her. You cannot look her in the eye. And you cannot, like, they gave them like a whole like speech about like what they could do and what they couldn't do.
Wow.
And then finally she was on set the next day and she was like, why is nobody looking at me? She was talking to the guy. She goes, why is nobody looking at me? Why is no one talking to me? And the kid was like, she goes, well, they told us to say that. She goes, they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And apparently she was a hoot and a half to have on the set.
I love that. You know, it's funny because I was doing a little regional production of Titanic at the theater in Virginia Beach. We were in the rehearsal hall, and this is 10 years ago, and we were told the same thing because Bill Cosby was going to come and do his comedy act, but I have a feeling that they were telling us not to look him in the eye and engage with him for a very other set of reasons. I'm not even kidding you. They said, if you see him in the hallway, do not look at him, do not engage with him, do not talk to him. They didn't say especially the women, but I think we all knew who they were talking to.
I did not know that. I honestly...
They really did. They said, do not engage with him in the hallway. Not interact with him. And they didn't say because he's mean. They just said,
Us he was mean. Remember, Mary Stout told us that story when she did a TV show of his.
That's right.
Remember, he was a total asshole to her.
Oh.
I thought you were
going
to say...
How can you be an asshole to Mary Stout?
She makes salsa.
She literally gave us jars of
salsa and tomato sauce. And then told us about when she stuck her breasts out the window and yelled, tits for Tito.
I can't believe you remember this stuff so well, Rob.
Because the tits for Tito story, I was like, that's a great story.
I'm so impressed you remember that.
I thought you were going to tell me that Bill Cosby was in Titanic with you.
No, it was one of those theaters in Virginia Beach that was sort of like their city theater, the Sandler Center, that's what it's called. And we had a three week run and he had like one night and then we were in the rehearsal hall and we didn't start for the next week. And so, no, like, can you imagine if he was in Titanic with us? Who was he going to be?
Jell-O Pudding Pops presents Titanic.
And the ship's going down, they're going to go, glub, 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 glub. I cannot believe you just did a Bill Cosby.
The line, Mr. Cosby, is the ship is sinking. Glub, 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 glub. That's not a really good Bill Cosby.
No, but I wish, listeners, that you could have seen the vaudeville show that Rob just put on right now.
I did good. I rolled my eyes up like he does. I pulled a little pudding pop in my hand.
Well done.
So he's.
I think we've talked about Bill Cosby enough on this episode.
I think we're fine. And yep. Make sure to go check out his show, Fortune in Men's Eyes, which is now playing at the Pittsburgh Correctional Facility.
Very good.
Bill Cosby.
Very good.
Directed by Mary Stout.
Oh, man.
To seek her revenge.
Who's in charge now? Oh, God.
So what happens now? So what happens now?
My favorite things.
Oh, that's what happens now.
I think so, my friend.
I thought it was another suitcase in another hall.
Angela Weber, when I was growing up, I used to play the piano and sing all the time. Every single day I'd get home from school. I'm sure it comes shocking to those of you who know me, but that's what I did for years and years and years during high school. And boy, I had this two-volume Andrew Lloyd Webber sheet music set, and I would I know Rob just pushed his glasses up on his nose. No, I really would. But boy, nerd alert, because I like live for that Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff, even by Jeeves, you know?
Get out.
No, I'm serious.
You even Starlight Express?
Half a moment, we are together, I shall... Oh my gosh, I loved his stuff. I use the past tense because I still like it, but we evolve a little bit. We discover Sondheim. We discover Janine Tesori. Yep, Starlight Express, all of them. Oh, boy. Oh, Rob. And I have to say my favorite to this day
Rusty
is...
Rusty or Blind.
I never got into Starlight Express like to memorize the score the way that I did for Song and Dance. Song and Dance was a favorite thing like a year ago, but I loved that score. Oof.
Demon's got the power to pull us along. We'll see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
That's Starlight Express.
Which ran forever on the West End.
It did.
Listeners, do you have a favorite Andrew Lloyd Webber show? I'm just curious. I'm curious which era of Lloyd Webber, because like I grew up with Jesus Christ Superstar because my mother was obsessed with Ted Neely and the production, and we was one of the first shows I ever saw. But I'm curious, what other shows of the Webber do you like? Are you a Phantom of the Opera kind of gal, or do you like the Evita? Are you a Woman in White, or are you what's the one about the soccer player that never came here?
Beautiful Game.
Yeah. Are you a beautiful game?
Is that right?
Beautiful or with this? Game? There's one about a kid's name, Steven something. I don't remember.
Billy Elliot. That's
yes. There it is. Thank you.
No, Evita. Evita's mine. I love Evita. That.
Nice.
Yeah, I think Evita's great. Although, not a fan of Don't Cry For Me, Argentina.
Fun fact.
When I'm listening to Evita, I'm like, I'm very excited.
Skip song.
I hate to say it. Don't Cry For Me, Argentina is my skip song on Evita.
Wow.
I'd rather listen to, like, you know, Perone's Latest Flame.
I mean, they're also
twice in a row.
They're funky and weird, and I think they're really, really interesting.
On this night have a thousand stars. Apparently Dracula was in this production of Evita.
Fantastic. All right, well, my favorite thing this week, I have no great transition other than to say that this is a spectacle musical as well, one of the first spectacle musicals of its generation.
Is it Starlight Express?
No, my friend, it certainly is not. It is from the 1950s. It almost was a big old fat flop, but because they kept working on it and retooling it and kept working on it, and with the help of a little show called Toast of the Town, which later became the Ed Sullivan Show, it played on there, and they because this show was such a spectacle, there was this special item on stage that made this show so special that they put that on the television show. And you have to remember, in this era, there were only like three or four channels. So if something was on one of these stations, you had millions of people watching it. It was in 1952, written by another unsung hero of musical theater that we forget about all too much.
I think I know what this show is, but I could be wrong.
I think you're going to be right.
Is it Wish You Were Here?
It is. Very, very good. Wish You Were Here, which kind of goes along with my theme of the last 2 years of being obsessed with the Catskills of this era. I just love these stupid
Kev
stories.
Loves the Catskills.
You know I do. Give me Marvelous Miss Maisel any day of the week, and I love it. Give me season two. Wish You Were Here, written by Harold Rome, and the book by Arthur Kober and the great Joshua Logan, who also directed it. It took place in the Catskills and at Camp Carefree, with a K, and it starred. I mean, come on, we had Jack Cassidy, one of my favorites, and you know, you had a young Phyllis Newman in there, Larry Blyden, Florence Henderson in her first role or little ensemble, featured ensemble. Reed Shelton was in there. Sheila Bond, who sang this great song "Shopping Around," which I still assign to students to this day, kind of a vampy song.
It's a good song.
It really is. And the show had trouble at the start. I mean, and the spectacle part of this, friends, is that there was a full on swimming pool that was used at the end of Act One that was on stage like the whole time. And this pool was there that was full of water, and they would swim in it and dive into it. And it was like a spectacle. They tried to make a spectacle out of every moment they could, whether it be raining on stage or playing basketball at a basketball court on stage, which may not seem like a spectacle in today's audiences, but 1952, this was a really big deal. Oklahoma was only like 9 years earlier. So the show was like, was in trouble. They brought in Jerome Robbins to come in and fix things. Of course, he was the show doctor of that era, and he restaged some things, added a ballet to the second act, but it was really going on the Toast of the Town TV show that really started the word of mouth, and then it really took off from there. But I think one of the other fun facts is that because of this, I have a feeling it had to have been because of the swimming pool, but this won a Tony Award for Best Technician. Good old Abe Gurnett. Ruff's laughing. He won for Best Technician, and I just like to remind listeners that there was a category up until about 1970. Mr. President was the last year, so it was 1962. Was the last year we had a category for Best Stage Technician, which I think is
probably.
We don't have one for Best Music Director, but they had one for Best Stage. They used to have one for Best Music Director, but
let's see Mary Mitchell Campbell try to fill a pool. She wants a Tony?
Yeah. How hot do you want it?
Okay. Good luck, Mary. Alex Lackamore is going to try to put in a diving board. Good luck.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
Have fun with that one.
Have fun. Fuck your Tonys. And her name's Antoinette, you asshole.
Oh, my goodness. So I don't think it'll ever be done today. I think that this is a bygone era, but I think that if you listen to Wish You Were Here, you will enjoy the score. You will have a really great time. You got to love Jack Cassidy and anything he does, but it is in that era of a little post-war, euphoric musical theater time, and I think this is a great capsule going there. And it is dated, but it is a jolly good score, and I would say check it out.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I've heard it a couple of times, but you're right, the pool.
The pool was the big thing. I mean, that was a big drawing fact, and it ran. I mean, it ran for almost 600 performances. So when you think of shows of the 50s that ran for that long, that are virtually unknown today, that, you know, it's worth remembering that this was a hit show.
Thanks, Abe.
Yeah.
What was his name? Abe what? The technician?
Abe Kurnit. K-U-R-N-I-T.
Thanks, Abe.
Good old Abe.
Tony Award-winning musical Wish You Were Here. You can say that, though.
Yes, you can.
Tony Award-winning musical Wish You Were Here.
That's right.
For Abe.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what else he did in his life. I hope he did a bunch.
I'm sure he was like one of the richest, you know, prop guys on Broadway.
Absolutely.
Well, they all are anyway. I mean, please.
Oh, absolutely. They all have like townhouses and.
When you go to those, Broadway theaters, like I remember the Walter Kerr, the guys and the ladies downstairs that because they live there, right? This is their theater. You're guests in their theater. Their rooms, their offices in the basement were like decked out, leather couches, big screen TV. Because if you're doing a show where it's just like Bruce Springsteen singing, how much tech work are you doing? What are you going to do during that show other than watch Bruce Springsteen? But you got to watch the football game. I used to watch football in there. I mean, it was nuts. It was
crazy.
I
wonder if Abe haunts places.
Mm.
Like just Abe like goes around and like leans into people's ears and tells them like how to be doing their job.
That's a shitty prop you got there. I wouldn't do that if I were yous.
Never picked up a drill. Ooh, I'm a ghost. Then he flies away.
Hope the sandbag doesn't hit you on the way down.
I'm flying by foy.
Thank you. That's good.
I think there's a little Peter Pan there for you, folks.
I liked it.
A little Peter Pan.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And what is your favorite thing today?
Well, my favorite thing is three little things that comprise one big thing. We're going into the world of television.
Are you one of your favorite genres?
One of my favorite genre. Okay, so folks, maybe you remember this, Kev. In the 1980s, there was a television show on called Head of the Class. Mm-hmm. Yes, that starred Howard Hessman, fabulous theater actor. Head of the Class was about a high school in New York, and the classroom was gifted students. It was a gifted students class, right? And you got to see all their crazy personalities and stuff. Well, I don't know what queen was working on Head of the Class, but I want to meet them because they came up with this idea that every season it would make sense that the high school would do a musical.
Bless.
And they did three musical episodes over their series.
In the 1980s, no less.
Yep. So, folks, these are my three favorite things for the week. So Head of the Class is the big one, but you have to go down. And the three that they did were Little Shop of Horrors, Grease, and Hair.
I knew you were going to say that. Yep. I was trying to guess in my
head. Those were the three. And so Little Shop is fun because, first of all, it wasn't just like, oh, okay, like you're going to see them like backstage getting ready and like then they go on stage and they cut away. They were doing like full-on scenes and musical numbers on this show. So you actually got to see like a lot of Little Shop of Horrors and a lot of Grease and a lot of Hair. Little Shop is pretty cool because Little Shop, the story on Little Shop is there's Arvid, who's like the geek of the class. Mm-hmm. But this guy looks like Seymour from Central Casting. He doesn't get the role. He's the stage manager because he's a little stage shy.
Okay.
So the really good-looking kid, the yuppie, Alan, he's going to play Seymour. But then he gets laryngitis. So Arvid has to step in and play him. They do like full-on production numbers. They do all of Somewhere That's Green. They do all of Feed Me. They do all of the dentist's number. They do full-on numbers.
Is it on a stage or a sound stage? I mean, can you tell that it's in a theater? Or
it's supposed to be on the high school auditorium stage.
Oh, my goodness.
So, like, you see, like, a stage, yeah. And they have, like, a bad set and all that
stuff. They had to rehearse it and everything, too.
Yeah,
they had to, like, put in full time to put these production numbers together.
It is full-on, like, not just, like, a little thing here and a little thing there. They're giving you the whole show. Hair, I'm just going to warn you now. Hair is really, really exciting, and I'll tell you why. It was a two-parter.
Ooh.
Because the first part of the episode is Howard Hessman's like, we want to do Hair. Mm-hmm. And the principal is like, nope. He goes, we can't do Hair. He's like, we're going to get in trouble. I'm really nervous. We're going to get in trouble, and we're going to get in trouble. We're going to get in trouble. And at the end of the first part of the episode, it's intermission of Hair, and all of a sudden, the doors fly open, and the police are standing there, and they're like, you're all under arrest.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the principal, who is this big, large guy, go, oh, and they go, to be continued.
Wow.
And then you pick up next week, and of course, if you know Hair, that's what happens in Hair.
Right.
They have a fake cop come in to end Act One to scare the audience, and then
look,
you realize it's just intermission. So anyway, you can find clips of these on YouTube. But like I said, the one thing I really, really applaud is they're doing full-on numbers, yeah. And not just one number, like three or four different numbers. And they're actually, I think, really well done.
Mm-hmm.
So take a look at Head of the Class. We're celebrating some musicals.
I like it.
I wonder if there's any shows they could have done that they didn't. What's another like typical high school show?
Because I was thinking of like the hit shows, because this is like mid-80s, would you say?
Yeah,
1985, 86. Because there's not nothing on Broadway that was like that big. But I'm thinking, like, Grease obviously ran for like 8 years.
Yeah.
The long-running shows, like I could have seen them doing like Fiddler. You know, that I feel like
Fiddler.
Every high school did Fiddler. I mean, everyone did Fiddler.
I had a friend who did Fiddler at a church in Texas. And they were so concerned that Tevye was not Jewish enough. This is a true story. That Tevye was not Jewish enough. Instead of selling milk,
no.
This is a true story.
No,
he sold bagels.
I thought he was going to say latkes or something.
No,
but
no. They felt that they didn't think it was quote unquote Jewish enough. It's a church in Texas, and this was like years and years ago. This is like the '80s, and they had him sell bagels. He was a bagel salesman.
Mm.
I don't know if he only sold bagels or the bagels were like in addition to the milk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe he was selling cream cheese.
Just like a big stick of bagels on them, you know, like on the cart, you know, like he was like a salesman. Like
that
you
makes
know.
Sense.
Yeah, sure. You could, yeah. You know, I don't know where he made them and boiled them, but still, you know, great. Was there cream cheese? I don't know. Was there a cow there too?
And they were milking it. The milk was coming from the cream.
Scallion cream cheese as well, please.
Yeah.
You know, low fat. Thank you.
Yenta. Yenta was in charge of making the bagels.
Probably.
Or Golda.
Golda definitely was. And the girls, I mean, hello, what else are they going to do all day long other than clean matchmaker? Matchmaker wasn't actually sweeping. They were actually making the bagels during matchmaker. Matchmaker, make me a match.
That's actually a great idea because you're at, how much can you clean a house?
I mean, when you do that like in the scene study class, you're like, Ed, you guys are sweeping. You're sweeping over there. You're mopping that. I mean, really, though, this song is a 5-minute long song. I mean,
and you have to remember, all Tevye says in If I Were a Rich Man is because I want a big house. Yes. I want a big house. So that means he doesn't have a big house.
Right.
So what the hell do they need three people to sweep for?
I don't know.
This building here is like 12 fucking stories and I see one custodian.
I know. Hello?
What the? So either we've got it wrong or Tevye's looking a gift horse in the mouth. Tevye's got a mansion. He's like, I want more, I want more, I want more. One large staircase just going up.
And a separate one. A completely other staircase going down. Like in high school, there's the up staircase and down staircase. That's what Tevye had
Tevye,
in his house.
Tevye, you are what Bernie Sanders is talking about.
Oh my gosh.
You are the 1%. You are the 1%.
I'd like to see Bernie Sanders as Tevye.
Oh, yes.
It's just crazy.
What a great idea.
You know?
Bernie Sanders as Tevye.
Right.
I would pay to see that.
Yeah.
I would also probably pay to see like Barack and Michelle in the show, but I don't know which one.
Mm.
You know what we should do? Barack and Michelle, George and Laura. I love my wife.
Ooh. There you go. Done.
Right?
Put that on Netflix, you guys.
Put that on. I know the Obamas are like, we're producing shows.
I know.
Do a musical.
That's right. There you go.
Do a musical. That's actually a really good idea. Do we have any others? No, I think that's it. Bill and Hillary and Kiss Me, Kate.
That's good.
Right?
Yes.
I think that would be great.
I would. I'd watch that.
I would in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
I don't know if he can sing, but I don't care.
Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Melania, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, I just threw up a little bit.
And it could take place at Mar-a-Lago.
Mm-hmm.
Little product placement for
I will not end the podcast with that sentence.
I am trying to think outside the box.
Not that box, please.
Wow. I am trying. Okay. And then maybe like, that's all I got for you.
All right.
And then me and Fun Home.
Oh, you're... Sydney Lucas, look out. Here comes Rob Schneider.
I'm going to play all of them. I'm going to play young Allison, middle Allison, old Allison.
With just like a little different hat for each one.
Yeah, because that's how you know it's a different character.
Exactly. They're wearing different or wigs. Hats. I would love to see you in a wig.
I would wear, I would probably need like a...
Like a long-haired one, like a short one though for like later on.
Yeah,
you know?
So like you watch my development.
Exactly.
You're right. You're right. You're right. Paul Huntley. Can we get Paul Huntley in here?
Thank you.
Get me a lace front.
Please, a sensible lace front, please.
I love a lace front.
You do?
Have you ever worn one?
I actually never have. I've never worn a wig in a show.
Oh, because your hair is it's flexible.
I got some hair.
You could have hair. Period.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be a period hairstyle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did any of the guys in Little Night Music wear wigs?
I don't think so. No.
Angela did, right?
Yeah, no, all the women did.
Every single woman
did. Yeah.
Elaine had one.
I don't think anybody did.
For her.
Yeah.
Elaine didn't wear a prompter, right? She didn't wear an earpiece.
No. She refused to wear the earpiece because Angela did not wear one either. So Elaine was like, well, because Angela was supposed to wear one, but she didn't because she got the lines down. And she had for all the previous shows that she had done. So we had the prompter for those shows as a stage manager, Mary McLeod. And so Mary was hired because she was sort of Angela's prompter for like Deuce, Blythe Spirit, you know? And so... But she didn't need it. But Stritch was like, no way.
Really stupid question. How do they know when they need the line?
That's the reason why they had Mary was because Mary knew the amount of like sort of like the pregnant pause that Angela would give. And it wasn't like because you would think, oh, they're prompted. It's just like a running line in her head the whole time. No, not at all. She knows the lines. It's just that one moment where you go up on it just for a split second and she'd give the first word or the first couple words and then she would get the rest of the line.
Oh,
you know,
interesting.
I think that there was also a prompter used in the more primitive days in the early 80s for that The Legends tour that was isn't it right with Mary Martin and Carol Channing, and Mary Martin had one, and they famously would be like, "What?" And Carol was like, "You say the line, Mary." You know, like she was talking to the prompter because she couldn't hear it loud enough.
Actors having full on arguments with
guys,
each other.
I'm telling you, Gary Beach was on that role on that tour, and he's like that book, The Diary of a Mad Playwright, that James Kirkwood, the playwright, he wrote his chronicling the it was a favorite thing our first year.
Gary said it
was worse than what that book chronicles, and that book was crazy.
I like the Elaine Stritch story she told it at Liberty. She was doing the women on Broadway, and I can't remember who the actress was, but someone couldn't remember her lines, and they didn't have earpieces back then, so the actress was hidden behind the sofa. The prompter was hidden behind the sofa, and nobody told the other actors. So Elaine Stritch was like, she goes, "I was supposed to say, 'Hi, princess, what's up?' and then like go behind the sofa to make a drink," and she was like, "Jesus!
Holy shit, yeah.
Like, there's a woman on the floor."
And of course, Stritch she would just react to what was ever going on in the world in that moment.
She was my favorite, because when I saw Little Night Music, she got into like her first two lines, and then like yelled at the granddaughter, "Don't give it to me."
It was the prompter off stage left.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. Because
I was there. I was on stage.
Yeah.
Because Mary was still for the entire run. She would be off stage left to prompt just in case Elaine needed it. But we had all these different ways of giving Elaine her lines, and it was she was charming. I loved her. But there was the little girl would give it to her by the end of the run. Fritz would whisper in her ear. That was particularly genius because he's wheeling her around everywhere. So whispering in her ear is smart. And then the one time that there was a really long pause, you were there, and she said, "Don't give it to me."
I was
in
there
the audience.
Night.
And it was about as horrifying as you think it would be. It's a funny story now, but
I was there for "Don't Give It to Me." I
wanted to hide.
And they didn't. They didn't. And she decided to sing "Ladies Who Lunch" instead. And it was a nice moment for everybody. Little girl just sat there kind of confused.
Man. But that at Liberty, I watched it again recently. It's stunning. It really,
it's
the
good.
Storytelling, I mean, you have George C. Wolfe and you've got great people, and John Lahr and everything, but Stritch, her storytelling, there was nothing like it. And when she looked you in the eyes and was communicating with you, those blue eyes pierced you, there was nothing like it. Absolutely nothing like it in the world.
The Tova Feldsha of her day.
Broads.
The piercing eyes. All right, so go watch Elaine Stritch at Liberty, watch some Head of the Class, and then dive into the pool for...
That's right. Wish you were here, and have a great time in the Catskills this summer.
Oh!
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.